To the Berry Nation podcast, where we support the bariatric community with humor, humility, and honesty. I'm April.
I'm Jason.
And I'm Natalie.
And today, if you are watching, you are seeing one of the most fabulous humans on the planet, Miss Ebeth Goad. Hello, friend.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here today.
We are so excited to have you on this episode. I just want to give our listeners and our friends and our watchers a little heads up. Today's conversation is going to be very heavy when it comes to setbacks, overcoming setbacks and obstacles. Ebeth is going to share her very personal, very powerful story, and it does involve alcoholism, mental health, and some eating disorders. So if those are triggering for you, or if you're not in the space to hear her story, we recommend that you skip this episode. But if you are here to learn how she has overcome all of these things in her amazing life, then this is the episode for you.
Have you ever wished you had a dedicated bariatric buddy to help guide you along your weight loss journey? Well, guess what? You can find that person. Patient Partner connects pre-op bariatric patients to vetted post-op bariatric patients who help and encourage each other along the way. Patient Partner helps you feel more empowered, prepared, and supported through your surgery by connecting you to a community of recovered patients so you can move forward with confidence. Click the link in our Instagram bio to learn how you can take advantage of this free service and follow Patient Partner at patient_partner.
So my friend, before we dive in, we would love to just get to know you a little bit. Will you take some time and just introduce yourself to the world?
Yes, I am so excited, like I said, to be here. I found Berry Nation, this amazing community, in November, and it has been a game changer for me. So I'm just so grateful for y'all. I am a military spouse. I'm currently living in Rhode Island for a second. I will be moving to North Carolina, my home state, go Heels, in July. So I'm very excited about that. My husband, Dean, and I have been married for about 24 years. And so that means that we have moved 17 times. We have lived in Japan twice and Puerto Rico and both the East Coast and the West Coast. So we have made it around the planet. In 2004, I had gastric bypass, Roux-en-Y, and I successfully lost about 150 pounds, which I maintained for about 15 years. And then I had regain at about the 15-year mark, which was a real struggle. But that was not my only struggle. I am a recovering alcoholic, which was kind of fast forwarded by my weight loss surgery. And I've been in recovery now for a little over 10 years. November the 18th, 2011 is my sobriety date. And so that's a reason to celebrate. But this has not been without its challenges. But I'm forever grateful that I had weight loss surgery. And so yeah, it has been quite the journey. So yes.
Every time that I have the pleasure of connecting with you, I get to learn a little bit more about your story. And it is fascinating. I mean, like every time it's like, oh, I've lived here. Oh, I've done this. Or, oh yeah. And it's like, oh my God, how do you cram all of this into a life? But you have managed to do it.
Yes. It's been very busy.
Right. I should say so.
Yeah.
Well, we're very excited to really dive into this conversation because, like we said, we're so thankful that you're willing to talk about this very personal, this very private journey that you have been on. But we just know from knowing you a little bit that you are really kind of on a mission to help end the stigma of weight loss surgery and support this community in any way that you know how. And really sharing your story is going to be so powerful, right? Alcohol and alcohol abuse, alcoholism after surgery is a big red flag that we all need to be aware of. This isn't, you know, and I mean, really, this is a human thing.
Yes, it right? is. Absolutely.
But that, right, that layer of surgery just bumps up our chances of kind of dealing with this afterwards.
It does. And it bumps it up significantly. Yes. People and with Ruin Y, people don't realize that the percentage is well over 50%, and that's that's nothing to sneeze at. And I was aware of that going in. I knew that that was a possibility, but I thought, not me. But all the signs were there. My father was an alcoholic. I came from, I had a history of alcoholism in my family. I was the party girl. My maiden name is, Fisher. In college, everyone called me Fish. But I drank normally for my age set. And, up until my surgery, I drank like the rest of the gang did. And then I stopped drinking for my surgery, and, not about 6 months after surgery, when I could have, some wine, I did, and it was off to the races. It was, it happened very, very quickly. Blackout quickly, within months of starting, to drink.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the hard part about that is as a child of parents and family members who are alcoholics, you're already 8 times more likely to become an addict yourself.
Exactly.
So having that 50% on top of the 8 times on top of that, that's a lot. Those odds are very, very hard to overcome it just anyway. And then regardless, once you start, adding the surgery on top of that. So it's, right. That was quite a mountain.
It was. And, the thing is though, that I joke that, alcohol was the addiction du jour that got me into a program of recovery. So I have been an addict of some type, probably since birth. Because of different coping mechanisms, my entire life, I have had some sort of addictive, behavior. And so, and it began with food at a young age. And so, that was my coping mechanism. That is how I dealt with trauma. That is how I dealt with, insecurity. And that was controlled. But when I got to an age when I could drink, that was, I sort of transitioned. So, and we talk about in the bariatric community, we do talk about this sort of phenomenon of transfer addiction. When I was no longer able to use food to comfort, now I had alcohol, but the problem is that alcohol, I became chemically dependent upon very quickly. And so then that caused the additional addiction. The additional dependency. So. Mm-hmm.
I relate to you so much, Ebeth. I am also a child of addiction. My biological father, my mom, my stepdad, it's just in my family. And I also used food throughout my entire, that was my addiction. It still is. Mm-hmm. So to hear your story is so closely aligned with mine. I think for me though, I still just struggle with the food addiction. I think that will always be my addiction that I have to deal with, but it is interesting how us as children of addiction, of addictive parents, we subconsciously pick up those coping mechanisms. We didn't know what we were doing, but we picked that up. And so I think it's really interesting that we lived very different lives, but really we didn't at the same time.
Right. And I think that that was one thing that was so helpful for me when I did, because I didn't have the support after bariatric surgery either. Because I am a military spouse, I relocate, as I said. So I moved from the bariatric community. And as you can imagine, bariatric program isn't really prevalent with active duty, I wasn't around anyone in this community. And so the only support that I had once I finally did decide to get help for my addiction, which is another story in and of itself. When I did finally decide to get help, that was the first time that I ever heard somebody with a similar story where I didn't think I was crazy. I had lived, now, mind you, I didn't get sober until I was in my 40s. So I had lived this life thinking I was crazy my entire life, and I was completely alone until I was in my 40s. And so knowing, that's why it is so incredibly important to me that we do have these conversations, and that we know that even though we may not have exactly the same story, we're not alone. Like, and we need to normalize that. We really do. So.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the, what's one of the major reasons why, you know, we, like you were talking about Berry Nation and what we've created, that's one of the reasons why we made sure that we had experts in these fields having classes, so that not only people could know that they weren't alone, but they knew that there was somebody out there that could actually speak to what they were going through. Because as also as a child of an alcoholic father, I prided myself on the fact that I've never drank, never smoked, never done a drug, all the while completely blocking off the fact that I'm wolfing down as much food as my body can hold, and, you know, expanding at a rapid rate to hold more food, all the while, you know, touting the fact that I've now, oh, I don't drink, I've never done a drink, like I'm not sitting over here pounding 10 cheeseburgers like that's normal. And, you know, so to me, I completely understand where that's coming from. But from, you know, like you and Natalie were saying, but on the other, you know, just because I held myself away from, you know, the super addicted with the alcohol and everything else, not that I was not still using the same situations, just with food. So yeah, I totally understand.
You didn't have the bad addiction.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Well, at least I'm not drinking every day. No. Let me just go to McDonald's for the fourth time. Or go to a different one so they don't remember me from 2 hours ago when I was just there.
Right.
Right.
Well, I mean, and truly the guilt, shame, and remorse is all the same. The feeling. 100%.
No, I told a story on here one time that was one of the last times that I ate like that before I had surgery. I remember everything about the journey to McDonald's to get food. And that was the first time I felt like, you know how they portray crack addicts in movies, mm-hmm. like, or real bad addicts, where they, everything about, like, they lead up to them going to get the fix, and they do the drug, and they do the thing. And they, like, I remember all of that playing out exactly the same way. Like, yes. I was looking over my shoulder, making sure nobody saw where I was going, pulling in the parking lot, getting what I needed, parking in a different part of my parking lot at work. When I get out of the car, I'm stopping at the dumpster to throw all the evidence away. I'm like, yeah. And then I try to go back into work full as a tick because I've eaten so much I can, you know, barely not throw up. And then I sit back down at my chair without anybody knowing that I've gone and done this horrible thing. You know, and so all of it plays out the exact same way. And that, yeah, to me, that's when I knew that I was not as great as I thought I was for not having done the bad stuff over here, because I was still doing just as bad on my own.
Exactly. And that, well, again, and that's why I'm so incredibly grateful that Berry Nation has it set up so that you have experts as well, who are there to help guide, and that it's important that we have the patient first. Yeah. It's so important that we share our journey, but it's also important that we have somebody who can guide us as well and give us good information, the important information.
And it really struck me too, as you were saying that, Elizabeth, that, you know, I've kind of always been an addict. I've always had those addictive tendencies. And I noticed that about 6, 7, 8 months, 1 year, even now still, Jason and Natalie can attest to this, I can just go off the rail with alcohol. Like mm-hmm. almost to the point that I could before surgery. I too come from a long line of very proud alcoholics. And I think I've got like 2 livers. I'm not exactly sure how or why, but that's just how it is. And what I've really started to come to realize is that I used to use food as the one place in my life where I could just let control go and just mm-hmm. rebel, right? Go crazy. Mm-hmm. I can't do that anymore, mm-mm. but I can do it with alcohol. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it's like, I'm just going to have a Truly or two. Mm-hmm. And then the next day I'll talk to Jason and Natalie, and I'm like, yeah, I had like 12 Trulies. And mm-hmm. I'm like, what? And I'm like, I know. It just goes from this to that. And I just have a very difficult time saying no, because I start to feel that loss of control. Mm-hmm. And then I get to the state of euphoria in a way, right? Because you're like, oh, finally, okay, I just get to, but then you pay massive consequences the next day. I mean, even in the moment, the next day, the week, for the rest of your life. And it's like, why am I doing this?
Right. Well,
you have to think about it too, though, on a daily basis, the amount of things that you shoulder every day is a lot. It's almost as if you've gained all your weight back every day on your shoulders. And once you start drinking those, you don't think about all that stuff anymore. So it's like you've lost the weight all over again. And that's why, it's easier to keep going, because you know once you stop, all those feelings are going to come back again. So that's why you keep the Truly train running on time.
Well, yeah. No, go ahead.
It's so like similar. It speaks to our society, right? Like we all shoulder so much every day. And before surgery, our food addiction was the way that we did that. Like, okay, I can just relax and I can just keep eating as much as I want and feel that sense of euphoria. Mm-hmm. Well, now we're, you know, X amount of weight lighter, but the weight of the world is still there. It's still probably getting more heavy as we go on. And we look for ways to feel that again. And, you know, I think we all go through that period of time after surgery of, you know, depending on alcohol or, you know, shopping. I mean, there's so many other ways that we can find that euphoria. And it's, you know, I think the bigger question is just like, how do we find that without indulging?
Right. And I know for me, shopping, you know, that too, I mean, there's a dopamine rush with that. And, you know, I'm a wardrobe stylist. And so there was a period of time where, you know, right after I had, when I got into my goal weight and, you know, I could now wear what I wanted to wear. And, you know, that was super exciting. And then I started, you know, at that point we had I'm going to date myself. You know, we were taking outfits of the day and posting them on the interwebs. And, you know, so anyway, but then I felt compelled, like, oh, I have to have a new outfit and I have to, you know, and so then the excitement of, you know, shopping. And that's so I had to rein that in. And two, with what I do, that is totally against my platform that I stand on about not breaking the bank. So, you know, so that was, you have to find other outlets. Yeah, like I said, the alcohol for me was that first step. And then later, when, you know, I had been sober for a while and skated along. But with the regain, I became desperate. And so my food addiction, reared its ugly head. And so I got back into the diet mentality and started, you know, restricting again and started, you know, doing all those things, because it was a default. I went back to my old ways, because now I can't drink. So, there's too much at stake if I drink. So, you know, again, that is why I'm so grateful. Like I've done now, I know I head work. I didn't have that component before. I didn't fully have that tool. Mm-hmm. I'm never going to be fully recovered ever. But I have so much more going for me than I had now. I know the tools. I know, and if I'm not using them, I know where to go to ask for help. And I know how to ask for help. And I don't have to be scared to ask for help. That is a game changer.
Holy shit. But that is so true. Not only do you need to know where to ask for help, you need to know kind of what to ask for, mm-hmm. and almost how to ask it.
Well, and yeah, and that's the point of it. Like what she had said, not to be scared to ask for it, because so many times we think, you know, just like I told you guys what I was worried about, the little bit of regain that I had. It's like, you don't want to step out and say anything because then people are going to know. And if people know, then what are they going to think? And if people think, what are they going to say? And then how many people are going to know? And then it's going to be this. And, you know, it's almost like before we're just jumping out of an airplane, hoping somebody on the way down is going to have a parachute. And now we know, look around the plane before you jump out, because there's a parachute there for you. Somebody just needs to hand it to you.
Well, and I mean, growing up around addictive people or people in addiction, they didn't ask for help. So that was a huge point that we missed because we were children of addictive parents. You know, we literally watched the shame cycle and learned that that was how you cope with things. And that really hit me when you said that, because I didn't know how to ask for help without feeling that sense of shame or guilt, or like I had to hide it, or, you know, I didn't know how to even ask it without feeling that way. How did you go about that? How did you learn how to ask for help?
So I didn't ask for help for many years. And part of the reason I didn't ask for help was because being attached to the military community, I was afraid of jeopardizing my husband's career. So I need to put out there a disclaimer for anybody, for any military spouse who is listening right now. You need to know that there is help and there is no repercussion. So I need to be very, very clear about that. There is help and it is possible. So I had in my head that that was going to be a problem. My husband deployed to Afghanistan for a year, and I moved to our forever home that we have in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And I started living basically a civilian life again. I had civilian providers and I hit rock bottom. I couldn't take it anymore. I was losing my mind. And I knew that my marriage was going to end. I knew that I was drinking at that point to die. I was drinking in the hope that I would not wake up. And when I woke up in the morning, I was disappointed that I was waking up. That is not a way to live. And so I needed help. And so I hit that level where I needed to go to a provider and say, help me, please. And so I did. And I was blessed to have an incredible team who helped me. My health insurance would only allow me inpatient rehab. I was not allowed to do outpatient. And for anybody who is considering an alternative, I do not recommend it. I think inpatient is the way to go. It gives you a time for yourself away. And for anyone who says, I don't have time for that, the rest of my life, I've got work, I've got family, the rest of your life will happen. It won't happen if you don't take care of you now. I was afraid my grandfather was turning 101. I was going to miss his birthday. I was afraid it was going to be his last. Because I went to rehab, I was able to be present for his 103rd birthday and take care of him up until then. So that was a gift. That was a gift of sobriety. So anyway, so that was how this started. And because I did enter I did go to a 12-step program for many years. I learned more tools and put them in my toolbox for asking for help. And so I just sort of over time, and I have to be persistent because I move. I change providers every time I move. You have to build a thick skin and be an advocate for yourself. So.
Well, and the very interesting part about, I mean, so much of what you're saying is we can ask for help, but if we're not kind of asking the right questions or if we're not involving the right people, then that ask could kind of fall on deaf ears. And it sounds like you really got to the point where it was just kind of like, okay, it's either this or my life will end, right? And for you to be able to go to a medical provider and say, I need help, right, mm-hmm. is really step one. Mm-hmm. But then what I'm also hearing is that you have acquired more tools as you go to help you deal with the alcoholism.
Yes.
And in so many ways, it's also parallel to our bariatric surgery, right? I always feel that my gift of bariatric surgery was it gave me a clean break from food.
Yes.
Not forever, but for a very long time.
Yes.
And that break was needed. So I kind of feel like the inpatient treatment that you're talking about is that break from just the reality that is allowing that behavior to continue. It's that clean break.
That's a great analogy. Fabulous. Right?
Because you just need to be. So I mean, the other thing that you said that strikes me, and it's hard for me to hear, I know it's true, but I just haven't quite like got my brain there, right? You said, I will always be in recovery.
I will always be in recovery.
Right. And when I hear that, I instantly want to be like, but no, but you're over it and you're this and you're that. So why do you say that? Why do you say I will always be in recovery?
I think I would be naive to say I'm cured. I think that I know there are a lot of people in 12-step communities who would be very upset that I am no longer an active participant in those communities. But as I said, I fully support them 100%. But as I said, my addiction, number one addiction, was food. And so I needed to come back to the core, and the core is the mindset, the help that I needed. I think that the fact that I had the regain is proof positive that I will always be in recovery, that I will always have to, this is each day is an opportunity for me to continue on the right path, but we all run the risk of falling off the wagon at some point. Right. So, and it could be just a little bit here and a little bit there. And then, you know, and then it sneaks up on you. Right.
I was just going to say, right. Like one day it's like, oh, I'm going to have this little snack, and oh, this day I'm going to do this, or, oh, I can go to McDonald's today and have a cheeseburger. It's fine. But then if you do that consistently, then you kind of have fallen back into that.
Right.
Gate, right. That pattern.
Exactly.
Then you look at your pantry and you're like, oh, like one day you're like, oh, what happened? Like I blinked and it's there. And I think that's something my mom also told me. She says, I always say I'm a recovering alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always recovering.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a recovering food addict.
Mm-hmm.
You're never really done. She hasn't touched alcohol for 12 years, but she still calls herself a recovering alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So can I ask you, Beth, how are you managing, dealing with, living with? You have a lot of layers of addiction. Kind of,
I do.
Kind of stack. I mean, it's like, oh, wow, right?
Surprise!
I'm so, I mean, like, and you keep referencing this mindset work. So how do you, I mean, I'm just going to say it, that just seems very heavy, right? How do you face it day after day? And then what is this mindset work that you are really referring to? What are these tools that you are relying on every day to help you get through these moments?
So let's just say therapy is amazing.
That's
approved.
I love me a good therapist now. So anyway, and that's challenging to get for me too, because I have to tell my story every time I move, and trying to find, and if it's not a good fit, and so
it's like you're dating, like on a first date. That's what I tell people. It's going to be painful, like a first date.
Yeah.
It's like 50 first dates.
It is like 50 first dates. It's a lot. It is a lot. Yeah, so I am a huge proponent of therapy. I think it's so incredibly important.
I'll just say this too. I think when people say, you know, well, therapy, but how is that a tool? And it's like, okay, but therapy allows you to publicly share your story safely so that you can work through what you're going on in real time. So I think some, you know, people just like, oh, well, you know, therapy's not a tool or therapy's not something I can do. It is, because therapy is just somebody else asking you questions and you taking the time to think about it and responding a truthful answer. So you can do that mindset work with yourself once you have gotten those questions that you can ask from a therapist, right? So,
well, and that, and the other thing is, people don't realize, do you know how many different types of modalities that there are in therapy? I mean, it's not a one size, it's not like you're just going and laying on a couch and like, well, today I did this, you know. Mm-hmm. It's, and you're not always talking about like the one bad thing that happened in your life either.
Yeah.
So, or the many, you know, whatever your story could be. So, yes. I mean, there's, yes. Yes. So that, I've been given a lot of tools. CBT is super helpful for like changing the way that, 'cause the way I hear things is not the way that they're said to me, but the way I interpret them, whew, that's a different ballgame.
I think all of us have had the world blown up like 10,000 times on ourselves because of what we thought we heard instead of what was actually true.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I'll even just say to April or Jason, well, I heard like, this is what was said. And then they'll be like, well, did you think about it from this way? And I'm like, of course not. That's not what my brain does.
Right. Yeah. My husband's often like, how about you let me have the conversation with you? Like,
this can be a two-way street.
He's like, 'cause I bet my answer would be a lot different.
No, would not.
He's like, you've had an entire conversation that I didn't even participate in.
Yeah. And I'm getting blamed for stuff I didn't say. Yeah, no, me and my wife have that. We go round and round like that all the time. And she's a therapist. So she, yeah, we always do that. It's great.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm a huge advocate for therapy. I was oftentimes after you have been diagnosed with alcoholism, you are misdiagnosed for all sorts of different mental health issues. I do have some mental health challenges that I take medication for. Unfortunately, I was misdiagnosed. So I have been on a journey to find the right combination of medication and diagnosis. So that has been fun by no stretch at all. So that has been a joy. But I do have, I do live with a lot of anxiety. So how do I deal with that? I try to do some mindset work, try to do some calming activities and that sort of thing, and do things that bring a little bit of joy in my life. So,
Well, that's another way of how being an advocate for yourself is so important, because, you know, for you to realize, you know, the misdiagnosis and stand up for yourself and say, hey, wait, no, not only is this not okay, not right, the meds I'm taking aren't good or right, and they do this, this, or this. And you have to be able to stand firm behind that, you know, yes, when you tell them, because a lot of times doctors, you know, they play the white coat game where they're, I know what I'm talking about. I did that. Yeah. But I know what I'm talking about, 'cause I know my body. So trust me, right, when I tell you this is not right. And I know what I feel and what you're saying is not matching. So that's why, you know, yeah, self-advocacy is so big in these situations.
It is. And it's really hard when you have mental health challenges to be an advocate for yourself. Because when you're in a vulnerable state, that is a challenge. And then you run the risk of going crazy and then everybody thinking you're crazy.
Right. So, you perpetuate the stereotype they're trying to sell you.
Exactly. You're like,
you twist the hell off, and they're exactly. like, hey, you are crazy. Let me get you a jacket to make you hug yourself, the shiny buckles.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a high risk you run in that situation.
Yeah. So it's a fine, it's a delicate line. So
it really is. And I have not been misdiagnosed, but I've been given the wrong medications for my diagnoses. And some folks know this, but I've been on the journey since my post-op because your surgery messes with how you absorb things. Yes. I was 4 months post-op and I was like, man, I feel sick to my stomach every single time I take my medication. And I just couldn't figure out why. And my, at the time provider was like, no, you're fine. It's probably just this, like you're recovering from surgery. Like he just played it off. And I finally went to a different provider behind his back and was like, look, I'm like dizzy, sick to my stomach, like cannot function after taking my medication. And she goes, oh yeah, that's like SSRI poisoning. Like an actual really serious medical condition. If you take SSRIs, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Literally could have killed me. And this doctor was like, oh no, it's just your surgery, you're recovering. So you have to be that advocate. And it's really scary and hard to, when you are struggling so much, whether you're in addiction or recovering from surgery or figuring out a therapist, et cetera, it's so hard to advocate for yourself.
It is. And that's why it's important to have community and a safe space where you can go and say, I'm not right. Something is not right. So, it is. So, it's important.
So Eva, what do you do on the days when just everything feels really heavy? Or what do you do on the days when things do not go to plan, right? Do you kind of have this like checklist that you work yourself through, or how do you really power yourself through on those days?
I kind of have this mantra. Number one, this is not my forever. That's the first. I just have to stop and be like, this is not my forever. I'm going to figure it out. The other thing is Marie Forleo just wrote, I think I just did it in the book club. Everything is figure outable. So
this thing right here.
Yeah. So I do that. I'll think if I just stop a minute, because I know my brain goes so fast that if I don't, like, I get panicked. And I know that if I just stop for a minute, I can figure it out. So, or if I just stop and walk away, I can come back to it. The world will not end. So, but there are times when I am beyond that, that's when it's really hard and I have to just lay down and I literally have to just lay down and do nothing. So, and that's okay. That's how I have to live life sometimes. That's the reality. So it doesn't happen all the time, but it happens.
It's not forever. Right. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, in the discussions that we've had with Wendy and Laura and these other therapists that we work with, if we do not get some space between our rational and irrational brain, we're never giving our rational side of a brain a chance to say like, hey, there's an alternative. If we just let this go, then we are all or nothing. We're making decisions that are, you know, that don't align to our goals. We're right. If we can just get a deep breath and allow that rational side of our brain to also engage, right? We can make more rational decisions about what we need to do to move forward.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll just spin out otherwise. So.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what has been, I mean, because you're 15 years post-op, right? Or more.
I'm almost 18. It'll be November. It'll be 18.
Oh my goodness. So when the regain happened, mm-hmm. how did you address that? Right. Because it was almost like regain came with alcoholism, came with mental health, came with husband's deployment. And like you had all of this that just kind of like went into a blender and just.
Right? Yeah. So actually the regain didn't happen. I lost weight after I stopped drinking because I wasn't consuming those liquid calories anymore. Mm-hmm. So the regain happened, interestingly enough, after a medication change. And at the time, it was a perfect storm. Menopause, medication change, and we had just had a major move to a bigger command. So that, and I was taking on more responsibility with my business as well. So a lot of stressors, and so, and a lot of visibility. I was highly visible at that point. And so it was kind of just the perfect storm. So I went to my doctors and I said, again, I went to my doctors and I said, something's not right. Like, and then of course I had to move. So I had to start over, and they started, you need to go to the gynecologist. You need to go to the psychiatrist. You need to go here. You need to go there. So I didn't really get anywhere. The pandemic happened. So this was pre-pandemic. And I lost about 20 pounds, but then I gained it back. And we moved here and I was like, I put my foot down. I was like, this has got to stop. The madness has got to stop. So it turned out there was a bariatric community here. And so that I got into that community. I will say that I am not as happy, but because I was so persistent, that is how I found y'all. I did my research. I bumped into y'all on the internet. And then I started working directly with Jeannie, privately. And I started working with Rodolfo, as well. And, I also am doing Laura's, course. Mm-hmm. And so, and, you know, attending support groups when I can and that sort of thing. So, I had to take it into my own hands. So, but the beauty of Berry Nation for me and all of those things is that while I have no stability in my life, y'all are portable. Mm-hmm. I get to take you with me when I make these moves in the future. Mm-hmm. I will always have you at my fingertips.
Yeah.
If I move overseas, guess what? You're still here. You're not leaving me.
No. And that is the power. Cause I really was thinking about, as you were talking about all of these different places that you have been in your life, how exhausting and how heartbreaking to have to pick up and say goodbye to people and resources and things that you've really grown to love and depend on. Mm-hmm. And to have to do that 17 different times, that just wears you down too.
Yeah.
On top of everything else that you have going on.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that, you know, there are supports out there that go with you, not with the outside circumstances of your life. They go with you. They are you.
Yes.
That's a very different approach to recovery and life and community and treatment than I think has existed before for many people.
Yes.
Right. And you also said the other thing that you said is so powerful. I think a lot of times we're weighed down by all of the other responsibilities that we have in life. Right. And to think that, like, I can't possibly take on one more thing. But we're the only ones that can do the work for ourselves.
Yes.
And if we do not just acknowledge, I have to take this matter into my own hands, I am the only one who can do this work.
Yes.
Then you're kind of out of reasons or excuses because you finally said, nobody can help me with this.
Nope.
I am the only person that can help me with this. And it's my responsibility to find the people who can help me acquire the tools that I need to do this work.
Right. And let me let you in on a little secret. Once you start doing that hard work, there is nothing more empowering, nothing more liberating than doing it and doing it for yourself. There's nothing. There's nothing that compares to it. It's amazing.
Well, and also, like, when you say you take that minute to slow down and say it's not your forever, and you can kind of formulate the plan at the same time you're using the mantra and saying it's not forever, but I know I need to do X, Y, or Z. I need to get started on, you can begin to take that time while everything has slowed down mm-hmm. so that you can kind of debunk the myth of, I don't have time to handle all of this on my own. There's just way too much. It's insurmountable. And at that point, you can kind of begin to, as you're slowing down and realizing that there is work that needs to be done, you can kind of twofold that and turn that into action, you know, continuing into your action plan, which will then lead to making that action plan go into work for yourself. And then you reach that, you know, the end goal of saying, now look at the work that I've done. This is why this feels so much better and is so much better for what I've done.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm just sitting here, Jason and Natalie know, in these types of conversations, I have to start making a list because I'm like, oh my gosh, right? There's just, because when sometimes when people say like, oh, I use mindset tools. Okay, well, what are those mindset tools? And then when you really start digging into them, your brain wants to say, oh, well, it's too big. No, a mindset tool is trusting yourself. A mindset tool is acknowledging that this is only temporary. A mindset tool is slowing down. Mm-hmm. It is figuring out a plan. It's limiting the all or nothing thinking that we tend mm-hmm. to do. It's formulating an action plan for the moment that gets mm-hmm. us out of that space. And it is really aligning our decisions to our long-term goals.
Yes.
Right. And the other thing too, the other mindset tool that you use is you stick to your no. No, alcohol is not a solution for this. No, food is not a solution for this. Mm-hmm. No, not taking my prescribed medication is not a solution for this. Mm-hmm. You tell yourself no, and then you do it. You don't
do it. Those are non-negotiables. Those items are life and death for me. Those items are like, those are non-negotiables. And when I allow those things into my life becomes completely unmanageable.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to safeguard that.
Oh, you're protecting your space.
Mm-hmm.
People make no out to be such a scary, mean word, and it's not. It's honestly the kindest word that we can use for ourselves is the word no.
Well, but we're so used to not being kind to ourselves that it's very hard to think that to think of it in that way. Mm-hmm. And you know, just like much like Ebeth said, you know, it's no doesn't have to be forever. It's so finite. People think it's just that's it. It's just no and that's the end of it. But if it's something that you know isn't as just destructing, you know, it's not going to be the ultimate destruction of you, it can be no for now. Mm-hmm. It can be a temporary no. Right. It doesn't have to be the all or nothing. You know, once again, that's breaking out of the all or nothing thinking. It does not have to be a finite brick wall no, just seal it up. It can be a no for now. Mm-hmm. But much like, you know, your list of non-negotiables can be as small or as long as you need it to be. Much like everybody's journey, your list of non-negotiables isn't going to look like everybody else's. Mine's not going to look like Ebeth's, like Nat's, like April's. It's going to be different. And my non-negotiable list may only have 2 things on it. Cool. My non-negotiable list may have 20 things on it. But guess what? If you know those are hard stops or need to be hard stops for yourself, then start making the damn list of non-negotiables, because I promise you at the end of the day, you're going to be better off for having that list and sticking to that no than you will be if you were just like, well, maybe I'll stop that later, or I'm going to stop that tomorrow. You know, there's always a better day to stop something, but it's never going to be better than right now. Because right now you're in the mindset, you know, you can stop it now, but you're talking yourself into pushing that date farther out because you know you'll talk yourself out of it again tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Kicking the can down the road, right? And we all get to the point where we just realize, I can't keep kicking this. I can't keep doing this. I was telling somebody recently, and I experienced this in my own life. And Ebeth, I think this is what you're talking about too, right? You've come to the realization where you've had bariatric surgery, and then you relied on those old habits again, and you found yourself kind of living the life that you lived before surgery, after surgery. Mm-hmm. And at first it's like, oh, okay, this is relief. This is no panic. This feels comfortable and warm and safe. But then for whatever reason, something in the back of your brain goes, this isn't what I remember it was. Or something goes, why does this not feel as good? Or I really don't like to live this way. Right. And it's that very moment that as bariatric patients, and I think just as anybody recovering, you have such a profound and powerful moment, because that's how you know you are on the path to living differently. Mm-hmm. Because what was once comfortable is no longer comfortable, and you are aware of it. That tiny moment is that is your ladder of hope, right? That is your moment of a future life that is different. And we so often let it pass by without realizing its significance, but it's like, no, hot damn friend, you know, that's not what you want anymore. Mm-hmm. That you know it, that's your answer. Now you build your life around that feeling. You build away from what you don't want because now you know.
Well, and we romanticize it so much. Like we romanticize those meals that we used to eat. Yeah. That just numbed us. We all have that one meal that we used to go to that you'd be like, oh, that's it right there. It can't get any better than this. Boy, it hits, woo, like heroin hitting the vein, boy. You just woo, numb out and everything's great. And you go back for it and you're just like, this is shit. Like, this sucks. Like, this is not what I was looking for at all. Like, it doesn't make me feel good. It doesn't taste good. It's not worth it. It's not going to be worth it killing myself on the scale the next morning when I beat my head against the wall because I did, you know, reliving the highlight reel of all the bad stuff I did the day before. It just, it is never as great as we made it out to be. It's just not.
And that's that mindset shift that we can really harness, because instead of letting our brains go, oh, this is horrible, this isn't what I remember. If we can very quickly go, oh, this isn't what I remember, sad. Oh my God. It doesn't do the same thing. Oh, I know now that something has changed. That's not serving me anymore. It's almost, for me, it was like, I felt a freedom from it. I could release it. I could let it go. I didn't have to want or lust or desire it anymore because that is not what I'm looking for. Right. And which means it's not in my past, mm-hmm. which means it's nothing that I've ever done before. So I can finally stop looking back and I can finally look forward or look in the present and go, oh, okay. So what is it going to be? What tool do I need? What is going to bring me that sense of joy, right? Or that place of being content? Because I know it's not the food. I know it's not alcohol. I know it's not shopping. Mm-hmm. That's a really powerful moment. That's a mindset shift. Then that's heavy lifting, but that is, mm-hmm. it's what we're all talking about. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Gosh, I feel like my brain's leaking out of my ears after conversations.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know what I mean? Like after you just have done so much, like, learning and reflecting.
Mental gymnastics.
Oh man. Welcome to the work of weight loss surgery. So Ebeth, I think the final question we kind of like to ask you is more of like a, you know, we would love for you to offer a moment of like introspection or like a moment of hope. If someone is listening to this podcast or they're watching it and they've had bariatric surgery and they realize that maybe alcohol is becoming a limiting factor in their life or shopping or anything, right? Something mm-hmm. is entering their lives and it's starting to control what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Where should they start? Or what piece of advice or guidance or hope can you offer them to get to where you are now, because you are a very successful human now. You're dealing with your issues, you have a fantastic life, you're working hard, right? Like you're doing it. Where can they start?
Well, first of all, I want them to know that it's all possible. Like it's not too late. It is never too late. So I remember thinking at one point, I was like, if I don't do something now, there's no turning back. I remember that moment. I was walking across an intersection. Like I remember it. And it wasn't too late, but I could have stopped a lot earlier. So if you're having those thoughts, now is the time to go and talk to a friend, to a therapist, to a mental health provider, to a doctor. Go to someone who can help you get the tools that you need to help you with your situation. So it is possible. It takes work, and it's not fun work necessarily, because you got to get down and get into the dirty like stuff. I want to tell you, my first year of sobriety was an emotional roller coaster. Oh Lord. But I made it. I've made it 10 plus years. I've made it through mental health challenges. I have, I'm overcoming my regain. I've lost about 30 pounds now. So I'm very happy with that. But it's one day at a time. It really is. And it's just baby steps, putting one foot in front of the other. And if you can just hang on and put one foot in front of the other, you can do it. So, and you got a whole community supporting you. So
a big one, a big, yes, huge, loving community that only wants to see your success.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And I think that's, we say this all the time, but right, we're crafting this beautiful, you know, meal of life for ourselves, but everybody has a different recipe, right? Everybody's going to make a dish, but they're doing it differently. If we're not sharing our recipes, AKA our stories and how we've gotten there and the setbacks and the things that we've overcome, we could be denying somebody your secret ingredient that they need for their own recipe, for their, yes, own life. So if we can get to the place where we can safely and comfortably share our story, we are sharing our recipes for this amazing life. And somebody might need it. And we're just so thankful that there are people like you who are willing to openly say, nope, this is it. This is me. Here's what I've been through. Here's where I stumbled. Here's how I got through it. Here's what I continue to do.
Yes.
It's so powerful. You're literally speaking hope into somebody else's life.
Well, thank you. And thank you for this opportunity to share, and for giving this voice to so many others. So I'm so incredibly grateful for y'all. You have no idea. And I hope this was helpful. So
very,
very. There is no doubting that, Yveth, no doubting that.
It didn't help anybody else. It helped us three. So, you know, right, what? We appreciate.
Mission accomplished.
Hey, for that.
All right. Let's switch gears a little bit. I would love for you to have the floor a little bit to share with the world what you are doing now in Berry Nation, because you have been welcomed to the Berry Nation community as an expert, and we are so bit excited for what you're going to be doing in Berry Nation. So share with the world what you got cooking.
I am so excited. Well, one of the things I have to share, so I was probably voted the best dressed at rehab. So
believe it.
I am the girl who went on a pre-rehab shopping trip. And I took a lint roller. So yes, I am that girl. I am a personal wardrobe stylist, and I am really dedicated to helping women to find their personal style. It was something that was such a challenge for me when I was younger, and I figured it out, and I had to navigate my way through the changes of my body. And also when I got married, my husband and I went from my salary to living on half of that, two of us. So I had to figure out how to dress without breaking the bank and be competitive in the job market as a plus size. So anyway, I am delighted that I'm going to be able to share some of that with Berry Nation. We'll be doing some exciting things coming up. So I can't wait for you to see. So,
Yveth, one of her first classes that she's going to be offering in Berry Nation is very much that, how to identify, how to find your personal style. She's also going to be rolling out Style and Trend Report. She's going to be teaching us how we can dress our shape and our size for every part of our journey, how we can really just learn to express ourselves visually with the clothes that we wear so that we look as good on the outside as we feel on the inside. And what we are so excited about, Yveth, is it not only are you a professional in just fashion and styling, but you really understand it from the bariatric perspective of changing bodies, loose skin, of confidence, of those issues. And you're approaching it from such a place of love and such a place of support. It doesn't matter what your size is. eBeth mm-hmm. is going to help you identify the person that you are inside and showcase that on the outside. It's going to be amazing, you guys. Absolutely amazing.
Yes.
I can't.
Yay, I'm so excited.
I know. So. It's been one of the top requested supports. Like when we started Berry Nation, we're like, oh, people are going to want macros and nutrition and all this kind of stuff. Nope. It's style. It's, I want to hang out with other bariatric people. I want to have fun. I need to work on my mindset. It's been such an eclectic request of support. And yet that is where the work lies, right? Because if you can figure out this one thing, you're going to free up your brain to do some of that other work that is needed, right? And we are a complete tapestry and we need help in all of the areas, not just the one. So we're just thrilled to be offering this type of support because it's so important. It's so meaningful to so many people.
I'm excited. I can't wait.
We are too. We are too. Well, eBeth, where can people connect with you if they would like to follow your journey or hire you as a personal stylist?
So you can find me on Instagram at eBeth Goad. And I have a website, ebethgoad.com. So, but Instagram, just DM me. I would love to chat. So
it's how the world does business now. It's DMing people. It really is. Yes. Just slide into those direct messages and share your story.
That's right.
We'll make sure, eBeth, too, we will link all of your socials in our show notes and website and all that kind of good stuff. So
fabulous. Awesome.
Yes. Well, we've got a little housekeeping to do, but eBeth, I will thank you one more time for joining us. This has been an amazing conversation and we are very excited to continue to welcome you back on the podcast to share your story and just talk more about your journey. Cause there's a lot of layers there and we're excited to learn and to unpack every single one of them.
Thank you so much.
Miss Nat, would you like to share with people our favorite day of the week?
Of course. So every single Sunday is our favorite day. It's the best day of the week for us. We get to shout out our amazing Instagram community. Every single week, we get to read your story, or I get to read your story. I get to edit it. I get to throw your beautiful picture up on our grid. And we as a whole get to learn more about you all in the community. All you have to do is go to the link in our bio, fill out a simple Google form. We'll ask you, you know, if you're pre-op, post-op, how much you've lost, your proudest moments, your struggles, and you can share with us as much as you want or as little as you want. And then upload a photo that you're proud of. Does not have to be a before and after, can be one that you are just proud of and one that emulates you as a person. And then I just, like I said, I put everything up and schedule it. And we just love learning about you all in the community because every single person is, like we kind of mentioned before, like everyone is different, but everyone is very similar at the same time. So it's just a chance for us to highlight all of you guys and again, show our gratitude and support for you all. You do not have to be a paid member of our community. All you have to do is just fill out that Google form. So super simple. I love doing it. We love reading and learning about you all.
We do. We love amplifying the stories of our bariatric friends to the world because that is how we are going to eliminate the stigma of weight loss surgery. Talk about why our lives are amazing after our procedures. And if you guys are looking for the extra layer of support, we do have the Berry Nation membership community. We give you 14 days to try it because we know the support might not be right for you, but we want you to be sure. And eBeth, I'm going to totally put you on the spot here a little bit, but you have been a member since the very beginning. What is the reason that you continue to be a member of Berry Nation?
You just continue to add layer upon layer of all sorts of different interests. The supports are amazing from head work to cooking to macros to all, I mean, it's just, it's very comprehensive. So, and then not only that, there's just the community chat. I mean, it's fabulous.
There's a lot. We've worked very hard to bring experts and patients together so that they can connect, learn, and grow in the same spot. And it is so important that we have a safe place to just gather as patients and friends and just say, hey, here's what my bariatric life has been like as a patient, right? And to have that safe place. And then to have the expert add that layer of support on for the community to go, I really wonder about this. Oh, there's a class being taught live, or oh, there's a video in the library that speaks directly to this, like addiction transfer. It's all there. So yeah, we have attempted to make it a very dynamic, inclusive, welcoming community. So no matter your age, no matter your stage, right? Ebeth is going to be almost 18 years post-op. She's a very active member of our community. You will find support in Berry Nation. So just head to our website, www.berrynation.com, to learn more about it. All right, my friends, I think we did it. Jason, you want to take us out, my friend?
Yes, ma'am. Ebeth, thank you again so much for coming on and being so vulnerable and sharing all the layers of your story. We appreciate that so much. And we thank all of you guys who have liked, shared, subscribed, and continue to spread the word about Berry Nation, the podcast, the Instagram, the community itself at large, just, you know, all the submissions that we got for our 100th episode that were just amazing. The voice messages from you guys just really, truly just tell us exactly what we needed to hear about what we have going on and lets us know that we need to continue the work. So supporting, you know, us has helped us support you guys. It is so amazing, the support that we get from you guys. We appreciate it so much. And just remember, you can continue to leave us ratings, reviews on your favorite podcast player and our YouTube channel as well. And you can also leave us voice messages on Anchor, aside from the 100th episode, just anytime you want to. If you have questions, we can incorporate them in the podcast and answer them there. So do not forget to use that feature as well. And just remember, at the end of the day, you've got this, we've got you, and we'll see you next time.
Awesome. Thanks, Ebeth.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.